CliffCentral.com.
Yes, indeed. CliffCentral.com. Monday morning, Bulelo and Leanne and I are here with you. And you can get hold of us by dropping a comment in the comments here. While we're doing that, just like, subscribe, etc. Make sure that you tick all those boxes for us. And then you can be part of the conversation. So a few people just commenting on Mandla, who we had on just now, who spoke about his suicide note and thought he, you know, he wanted to kill himself. He obviously didn't because he was on the show with us, but it's brave stuff. Sanele says, Mandla really is brave. I'm no schmuck, but I wouldn't say all of that in a taxi. Yeah, wow. Rusty says, It takes great courage to express your deepest thoughts. Strength to Mandla and bless you, brother. And Ricebeck saying, we need to destigmatize mental health. Let's speak out. Absolutely. It's part of what we're doing with Dr. Hanan on the show every week.
More breaking news.
Oh, yeah.
And shout out to Mandla. Mm. Freedom fighter and a man from Serbia referred to by his father as maligned as Jesus Christ.
Djokovic, yeah. Wondered who you were talking about for a second.
He's been banned from Australia for 3 years. What do you think of that?
What a boon, what a great blessing to not have to go to Australia for 3 years. That's what I think of that.
You can't go to Rangarunga, you know?
Yeah.
Australia's names are ridiculous. The thing about Australians is they don't know how ridiculous they sound.
Listen.
Because when they say Kookaburra.
I don't want to pile on Australia, actually. I don't have a dog in this fight, frankly. I mean, like I said it last week, the right thing would have been for Djokovic to say, fine, you guys don't want me there without a vaccination, then I just won't come. That would be powerful. You know, he should have done that. He shouldn't have half complied, maybe complied, filled in their forms, ticked the boxes, done whatever he's done. I don't care. Like, it's not important. But I do think that this used to be a nation, Australia, of pioneering people. It used to be people who went out into the hinterland and kind of turned, you know, this very bizarre continent, because Australia is a very strange place. The animals that live there are strange. The climate in various parts of Australia is so different that you would think, you know, it was impossible for one place to be so varied, diverse. And it used to be a place of tough people. I mean, we used to make jokes about Australians being these really hardy, tough people who just had a sense of humor about everything, didn't take themselves too seriously. Now, they're a bunch of cowering, whining ninnies who need to be babysat by their government every step of the way. How did that happen over, what, it can't be more than 30, 40 years that it changed so much? How does that happen? Because maybe there's a lesson for us and for the rest of the world in that. I wouldn't want to end up in a situation where I really believed that government had my best interests at heart. They don't. What kind of childish notion is that? And the fact that they've been through about, I don't know, 10 prime ministers in 5 years. You can criticize all kinds of governments all over the world. You could say, well, you know, it's disgusting that Vladimir Putin has been in Russia for what is it now? Since we ended apartheid, he's been president of Russia, right? Or at least in control of Russia. But there's the other extreme where, you know, you've got a new prime minister of Australia every 5 minutes. And how did that happen to them? How did Australia go from being a pioneering, bushwhacking, wild, crazy place full of tough people who laughed about stuff to being this place where everyone is afraid because if the government doesn't give you permission for something, you have to hunker down and hide in your house? How did that happen?
Yeah,
maybe it's like Rome at the end.
What is it?
It's like Rome at the end. You know, Australia got it so right that instead of, you know, you got to keep it sharp. Maybe they're celebrating like Rome at the end. You know what I mean? You just get fat and gorge yourself, and then everyone's just getting soft. And then, oh boy, the barbarians are already here. What happened?
Yeah, there's something about that. When a society is soft, you know, when you have your social safety nets and where everybody's middle class, and it's kind of, for some people, that's utopia. But I'm just sounding a little clarion call from the sidelines here going, if that's what you're into, great. Then Australia is a perfect example of that. If utopia for you is to be coddled and looked after and seen to by your nanny government, then great. Australia is probably a really good example of how that can work, because it does work. And there's lots that we can admire about Australia, don't get me wrong. But I'd rather be left in the wilderness, frankly. And I'd rather not have politicians at the controls of my life. And I certainly didn't for 2 years of lockdown. I paid zero attention to their rules. Zero. And I'd much rather have... Leave me to try and figure it out myself. I'm that kind of guy. If you're the kind of person who would like someone to hold your hand and shepherd you through and make rules for you because you can't make your own mind up, Australia's great. Good for you. Then move there.
Well, I mean, just as much as I've always had this picture of you, Gareth, living in a snowy mountain area in a cabin and cocking your gun every time someone walks across your property saying, get off my lawn.
Yeah.
I'm sure that there must still be those Australians in cabins in the Blue Manans who have these enormous shotguns and just don't care about what government's saying.
Yeah.
And they're just like bunch of softies.
Mm. Well, a lot of people are talking about this. So Graham says, I blame females in politics. Women run on emotions, hence that nanny effect. Look at New Zealand. No offense, ladies, but unless you have zero emotions like Angela Merkel, it gets messy.
Well, that's I don't know. I've seen a lot of movies that come into mind where you've got an Aboriginal woman sitting on her porch also with the gun going, get off my lawn.
Exactly, yeah.
I don't know so much. There's some tough women in Australia.
No, they really are. I will find this video for you because I saw it over the weekend. There's an incredibly stupid video of an Australian politician. I think McGowan is his name. Mac McGowan. And he goes off to this Aboriginal community in Australia and he has a translator there. And she's basically just speaking English with some words dropped in here and there. I've sent it to you and Bulelo Leanne. It's so embarrassing because it's such patronizing, like basically pure racism. And this woman is not actually changing anything that he says when she's doing her, in inverted commas, translation. Because what she's doing is just doing it in an accent that, I mean, it's so patronizing. And the politician, he's sitting there proud of himself. He's like, oh, this is great. We're reaching out to the community. But it's actually deeply insulting. You saw it. Did you see it?
Well, so
I'll play it properly tomorrow so we can. I've just got to find a version of it I can actually play on the show.
But yeah.
Oh, anyway.
Yeah, it made me angry. It really did.
You know, while we're on the topic of Australia. Yeah.
Yeah. I almost wanted her to defiantly just repeat everything that he said word for word.
Yeah.
And make an absolute fool out of him, but still, he was made a fool of.
Well, it's gone all over the world, and it is kind of embarrassing, but we'll play it on the show tomorrow. I've just got to get a good version of it, and then you'll see what we mean. Anyway, so there are also these common sense approaches, like Audrey, who says, why is everyone making such a big deal about this visa nonsense? Does anyone remember a yellow fever shot? If you don't have it, you can't get in some countries. A very fine point. I mean, you know, some places won't let you in unless you've had certain inoculations. So I think that's quite a sensible statement, actually. But what's happened here is that everything around coronavirus has been so politicized that it's no longer just a health issue. If it was just a health issue, this would be simple. You'd be like, sorry, you can't get in because you haven't ticked the box. And remember, the politicians who've turned it into a political issue for their own purposes, not because they care about you and me getting coronavirus, those people are the ones who will say, no, natural immunity doesn't count. So what happened to your trust the science, if that's what you're going to say? And we've discussed this. I don't want to go down that road again. Anyway, it's enough about Djokovic in Australia. Look how much time we've wasted talking about them. And again, as I said earlier, nothing that happened in that story is going to have any impact on you and me. So let's just move on. I do also want to refer to one other story, and we've discussed Britney Spears briefly, but you know, there's a Zimbabwean teachers protest and a lot of these people were arrested. You know, it's hard enough being in Zimbabwe because you can't find anything on the shelves and it's, you know, the inflation's sky high and hyperinflation, in fact, is sky high. And a bunch of teachers went to a street protest in Harare and 16 of them appeared in court on Saturday. They were demonstrating over the poor salaries that they get of 2,300 rand a month. That's what they're getting for teaching in Zimbabwe.
That's unreal.
Now, 2,300 rand You know, even, I mean, who do you know who's earning 2,300 Rand? Because I can promise you, I know domestic workers who are earning double that. Double that. And, you know, that's to clean the house. That's not to teach children. 2,300 Rand, I'd also be demonstrating, wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, their lawyers. Insanity. Their lawyers claim they were assaulted by police. They were charged with gathering to promote violence and bigotry. Bigotry? Because you're fighting for a salary? That's bigotry? Anyway, they're being represented by Zimbabwean lawyers for human rights. And the teachers will spend the weekend behind bars after their case was postponed. Their bail application is set for today. It's just, it drives me absolutely crazy that again, politicians will involve themselves in exactly the wrong way. Like, the right way to approach this is to say, listen, 2,300 Rand is absolutely insulting. That's not, for someone who's teaching at whatever level, that's just not an acceptable salary, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you figure it out. So it's again, this should be about numbers. But bigotry? Bigotry, that's the word they used as one of the charges.
It's like they pulled out some offense out of a hat.
Right. Yeah. Madness.
Yeah. It's crazy. That is so crazy. Teachers. Like, no serious place attacks their educators. No serious place. That is the one thing you protect to the deaf.
Mm-hmm.
The people that are teaching your kids. Like,
Is interesting to hear what other people earn, because you often, we only hear the comparisons upwards, right? We're like, oh, look at how much this guy won as prize money in the golf tournament. Or you hear about some doctor in, you know, in a fancy hospital somewhere, private hospital. Or you hear about the CEO of some big company and how he's given himself a bonus of a couple of hundred thousand. But you never hear about the people who are way worse off than you. And there's always someone worse off than you. It's just, it's a good reality check for anyone who's feeling a bit shitty about their lives this morning. If you were a teacher in Zimbabwe, 2,300 Rand a month. It's insane. Can't live on that. Anyway, this is interesting. That video of Zim military guy expelling kids from schools because no school fees is so sad. I haven't seen that video, but that sounds horrible. Mm. Carl says, my domestic worker is from Zim. She earns more than 2.5 times that. I'm fucking incredulous, he says. Also, the yellow fever shot never used to contain the living flesh of human babies inside of it. Corona's boring, obviously, anti-vaxxer. Sanella says, I mean, I'm going to let Corona's boring make, you know, their comments. It's, you're entitled to, I just don't agree with you. Sanella says, I'm not sure where this is going. I don't think I disagree with you. Don't quote me on that. I'm not sure what you guys are talking about. It's almost like you're having a separate conversation. Graham says, the irony of the woke people is that they scream bigotry without even knowing the definition of the word. Bigotry is an intolerance towards people with different views. Yeah, but people just shout that kind of thing when they've lost an argument too. You know, when if someone's charging you with being mean, because that's what bigotry is. Of course, it's got more serious undertones once you've got the force of law behind it. But basically, bigotry is being mean. It's being intolerant of someone else's views and treating them as less than you would treat yourself. Right? Is that an okay definition? If you're sitting there whining, you're being mean to me, you've run out of other arguments.
Yeah.
Wah.
So we do live in a place where being offended is... at the very worst, for next door neighbors with I'm right. I'm offended, so let's lean into I'm right immediately. And
absolutely.
Yeah, which is very troubling.
It's a very stupid,
very troubling
stupid point of view.
For the fabric of society. Right. Very troubling. Right. And I'm a social commentator, so as you know only too well.
That's right. You
myself
are very,
and Dan Moyani.
Very much so, yeah. I got some feedback from someone who says I was really kissing Dan Moyani's backside on the show on Friday, so I must listen back to it and see if I was being too nice to him. But I do like Dan, you know, he's a... So this is the thing, is sometimes people are just really nice, so you're just really nice to them. And I don't bring guests onto the show all the time just to grill them. I mean, he's written this book about his life. What am I going to do? So on page 52, you said you were happy, but I don't really believe you. You know what I mean?
Did you really mean that?
Yeah. So, and also, like, you know, Dan is—he's kind of one of the elders now in the media business. I'm going to bring him on here and say to him, "Well, you know, I didn't agree with this in your biography. It's just like a memoir. Let him come on." But at the same time, If you think I'm not doing my job as an interviewer, you let me know, please. I'm happy for the feedback. Embarrassing someone is tantamount to killing them. It's just the thought, says Rebellious Ruth. Well, that's where a lot of people start alleging that you're mean to them. You know, it's because you don't like me. It's because you don't like women. It's because you don't like white people or black people. It's because you don't like short people. People always, they fall back on that when they've run out of other stuff. And yes, there are people who are genuinely bigoted, but there are, I don't think there are that many of them left. Because you can't, they may be secretly bigoted, but nobody's actually out there being openly bigoted, are they? I mean, if they are, there's a lot of blowback for that kind of behavior, don't you think?
Well, I'm also a proponent of, it's okay for people not to like you, by the way.
Yeah,
like, who
right.
are you? Are you Jesus yes. Christ's cousin? Like,
yeah.
Why does everyone have to like you?
By Jesus Christ's cousin, do you mean Novak Djokovic?
Yes, I did mean that. Yeah, but I'm not big on people have to be nice to people.
No.
Although I had a very uncomfortable conversation with somebody I respect yesterday who feels the very opposite. But like, people don't have to like you. It's not built into the thing. You have to make yourself likable. And that's hard because you have to be nice every day. And that's also hard. So I don't know. I'm not sure if I like where it's going.
When was the last time someone said something that really hurt your feelings about you?
Hmm.
And was it about you or was it bigotry?
Actually, been a really long time.
Yeah, I can't think of the last time. And I understand, you know, if you listen to the show, I'm not particularly sensitive. that's saying the least.
Yeah, that's
right.
But it's putting it mildly.
But like, I wonder what kind of a person would wake up in the morning and decide, oh, you know, today everyone's going to treat me beautifully, and then think that's actually what's going to happen, and get upset by little things like someone says that you wear shitty shoes or whatever. Is that really worth getting upset about?
So I was talking to somebody yesterday, like I say, who's incredibly successful, and we were talking about the value of being nice. And I was just trying to ask her, you know, and I said, like, what is the value of that? You know, because sometimes just being yourself, people tend to respect that more, in my experience, than just being nice for the sake of being nice, you know, and I don't like it when people are just faking the getting along thing. Like, I know people by their very nature are bellicose and don't get along and don't agree. Why are we doing this thin veil of being nice to each other? I know what you think of that person. Just tell them. But she was explaining to me that being nice has like a real business value.
Mm.
So it's something I've got to think about, because I've never really thought about being nice. I always just think of being myself. But I don't know what that's like because I can't see me. You know what I mean? So I don't know.
I mean, Ruth Unwin says, someone wasn't sure whether I was a guy or a girl. I got offended, but I was boozed at the time, so I was oversensitive. Yeah, I mean, Bulelo, this is complicated. I've also got to think about it a little bit, because there is a value to being nice. Like, nice people actually do get ahead in society, and people want to be surrounded by nice people. They don't care whether you're being yourself or not. If you say nice things to people, you make them feel special, you do kind of get an advantage out of that, even if it's calculated.
Yeah.
There are genuinely nice people in the world. There are people who will actually find reasons to say nice things.
Yep.
Yeah. For some people, it takes more energy to be confrontational or attacking or questioning than it does to be nice. And then they're the opposite. Like Mulelu, you said, being nice every day is hard. So I think it really depends on the type of person. You know, for me, it's so much easier to be nice than it is to attack and confront and question and, you know, become belligerent. It's much easier for me to just be nice. Whether that's the good route or not, I don't know. Perhaps it's a bit lazy.
You're at a party and you could talk to anyone there. Do you want to talk to someone who is straightforward, maybe a bit belligerent, But they're really interesting. You kind of know that they've got opinions on things, and they will keep you busy, and you'll discover some areas of mutual interest and concern in some areas that you'll disagree with that person. Or do you just want to be with the nice person who's just going to, you know, is going to keep the conversation going? They're not going to upset you.
I think you're confusing nice with boring.
No. I don't think they're the same, because I know lots of nice people who are also very interesting. And I know some very interesting people who are awful to talk to. So don't. I'm not confusing them. I'm really not. Maybe my words were wrong. But let's say, all right, so you can go to, there's a little old lady who's sitting in the corner of the room, and she's just full of smiles, and she says lovely things about how everybody looks nice and happy and pretty. And she's she doesn't get into gossip and ugliness, and she's friendly, and, you know, she says something about everybody that's complimentary, and she's got this nice energy about her. Or you can go and sit with, you know, the most interesting looking, the most bizarre person there, but you take a chance that they're going to be very offensive and awful. Like Larry David versus Betty White, let's say.
Betty White all the way. Because she, and it's exactly along the lines, I'm glad you used her as an example. You sit with that nice old lady for long enough, boy, you're going to get the best stories and the best life lessons from her, without having, you know, gone the Larry David route.
Right.
It's like jarring and testing.
Don't get me wrong. I could watch Curb Your Enthusiasm with Larry David on it for every episode, and I'll laugh. But would I want him in my life? I think he's a very complicated person to live with. So probably not.
Yeah, I get bored quite quickly. So either the nice person, probably not so much for me, but it's an interesting thing that we live in the same world, but Leanne and I are almost living in two different worlds, you know, which is what makes the world the world. And in the end, we'll see who's right. And when Leanne and I die, because we're both 21, we'll obviously die in 2096.
Right. Oh, that's funny.
But Mulelo, just to quickly say, you did say, if I was with a nice person, I'd get bored quickly. So there you are, kind of equating nice with boring.
Yeah, I think you are.
Yeah, but because nice people, and I use nice, obviously a very myopic view of nice, generally just want people to get along. And I don't like that, because I know it's fake. Like, I know that's not how people are built. People are inherently selfish. I know there's something you want to say, and people won't tell you, but they want to say it. And I get bored really quickly, super quickly. It's like, this is terrible. I already know this stuff. Let's move on.
Let's then just say, like, Mulelo is an example of a not nice person. You
probably.
In other words, you're not going to walk.
Yet he's shown moments of niceness.
No, he can be. He can turn it on, and he's very charming, and he's, you know, he's got good manners and all of that stuff. He's not going to walk up to you and say, you look like shit today. If he's just met you for the first time, he's not like that. He's not rude.
My fucking coffee.
Yeah. But he is like, for example, that day I brought him coffee. He's like, oh, I can't drink this. This has got almond milk in it. But I get it. Like, that's fine. I'm okay with that. Okay. Did you notice I didn't bring anyone else coffee? Anyway.
Okay. It was a good gesture.
But the point is, here's Tembisa, for example. Maybe he's taking us in a sensible direction. He goes, I hate being nice. I detest these networking gatherings. I always crap my clients out for expecting me to respond to their emails when they don't deliver on their side. You see, there are a whole lot of different things going on here. So I appreciate what Leanne said. She's like, there's a difference between nice and boring. They're not the same, right? I think you and I, Mulelo, we equate them a lot of the time. And maybe Tembisa's saying here, he also in his mind, he doesn't want to have those small talk networking gathering. I hate those things. I can't do the small talk anymore. I don't want to talk about the weather. I don't want to talk about traffic. I don't want to talk about any of that stuff that people inevitably end up talking about when they don't have anything interesting to say to each other. And those people aren't always even anything to do with nice. And, you know, someone said in the comments earlier, you attract more flies with honey than vinegar, which is true. So if being nice is a tool, let's find the way to use that to our advantage, whether it's in business, in relationships, or whatever. And it doesn't necessarily mean nice people are boring, and it doesn't necessarily mean that just because someone's interesting, you want to be around them.
It's a manipulation tool.
Sure. Well said. My hope is that being consistent in the end is better than being nice. You know what I mean? Because if I'm consistent in what I do, and at least you can rely on what you're going to get from me long term, you don't have to like it, but at least you know what you're going to get. I always want to be consistent. That's actually my dream, rather than being nice. But well, it's hard. It's hard to translate that in a way that's palatable, you know? And yesterday, a great term was used is sometimes you got to use a bit of honey with the medicine, which is something that I was advised to start doing
a bit
more.
That's it. So deploying that weapon when it's most useful to you, and being nice is a weapon, just like being horrible is a weapon. Like if you are angry with everybody and you're spewing vitriol over everything that you encounter, eventually that, you know, that doesn't have any power. Like people, oh, he's always angry. Mm-hmm. She's always angry. Everything makes her cross.
What's he going to moan about today?
Right. Yeah. No one wants to be around those people. Interesting comment here from, who is it? It's from Anna Marie. She says, my mom always said, if you don't have anything nice to say, just keep quiet and always try to see something nice in someone. Yeah, I still think that's good advice. and you don't have to be.
I can see those in cursive italics on a board somewhere in someone's home.
Board. I know what you mean. One of those boards where you can rearrange the letters, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Graham says, actually, you attract more flies with shit than with honey. That's true, too. That's a very good point. Yeah, that's right. And who wants flies is another good point there. Who the hell's trying to attract flies? Said no one ever.
Yeah, that's true.
All right.
Bad metaphor. Let's.
It is time for one of my favorite things. On a Monday morning, we get to do Collectomania. And last week, I told you about my collection of chemical elements. And this week, we've got a really interesting conversation to have with Matt. Hey, Matt, how are you doing?
Hey, Gareth, how's it going?
Good. Nice to see you, man. First of all, let me just remind everybody that this is your moment to share your collection with us, too. If you have something interesting that you'd like to tell us about, you've been collecting things maybe for a short time, maybe for your entire life. Tell us about it. Because we're speaking to Matthew about his collection, but we want to know what yours is too. It's of course brought to you by the South African Gold Coin Exchange and the Scoin Shop. And you can check them out online at scoinshop.com. That's scoinshop.com. Go and find out more by going to check them out on the website. And you never know, you could end up collecting something that will increase in value and will keep you happy and become a bit of a hobby for you, because that's what collecting is. So Matthew, you're what, 31 years old? You collect Pokemon cards, right?
Yes, that's it.
All right. So let's take us back to, what, 1996? It must have been around then when these Pokemon cards start. What the hell is it again for those people who've completely forgotten, or they can remember something vaguely about it? I mean, I can remember what Pokemon, there was that little yellow thing with the funny tail and the ears like a bunny and the big eyes. I don't know what it's called.
Pikachu.
Pikachu, thank you. That was all I remember about Pokemon. And then there was the stage where people were like running down the street with their phone in their hand, trying to find, I don't know, how did it even work and how did you get into it?
So, yeah, Pokemon came out in 1996 and I probably got back into it about 1998. So I would have been about 8 or 9 years old.
Right.
And it's really, it started as a game. So there's actually a card game you can play. So I remember going to, there's a shop called Wizards in Stadium Main in Claremont in Cape Town.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd go there every Saturday and play games and trade cards at, you know, in the playground at school. And really kind of expanded into a collecting hobby as well.
Hmm.
So I really got into the collecting side of things. I collected cards probably till I was about 12, 13 years old. And then, like a lot of people, kind of got out of it when I went to high school. And then when lockdown hit, actually, when everyone was kind of bored at home, they opened up their files, had a look around, and they started Googling, like, you know, what are these things worth these days? What are people doing with them? And it just sort of blew up from there. So lockdown was really the trigger to get people back into it in a major, major way.
You know, it's always nice when you discover like 50 Rand in your jacket pocket, right? And you think, wow, that's nice. I didn't know I was going to find some bonus money in that old jacket that I haven't worn for 2 years. And it's almost like that with something with like your collection, because you probably had it, you put it away. At one stage, you were obsessed with it, and then you just forgot about it for a few years. And you mentioned lockdown, because for many people that was where you had time to maybe go through things like that. So when you looked through your collection, did you suddenly go, oh my God, I've actually got quite a lot of value here. Forget about the fact that I'm, you know, I'm proud of my collection and it's something I used to be or I still am really into. Do you know what your collection's worth?
So at that time, when I looked through it, I started looking around. I found a guy on Facebook and I started chatting to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he offered me 10,000 rand for my cards. And
wow.
At the time, the nostalgia value for me was greater than the 10,000 rand. So
right.
I wasn't really interested. But I started just getting more into it, started researching. And yeah, then he actually offered to help me try sell them on eBay at about 40,000.
Wow.
Then obviously that sparked my interest.
yeah.
But yeah, I actually drove out to Franschhoek to meet with him. And he helped me kind of get back into it, what had evolved in Pokemon since I stopped collecting, what everything was, what I need to do to complete my sets. And yeah, from there, I just got completely addicted, went straight back into it. And yeah, I went from about 500 cards to about 3,000 unique cards now.
Wow. You got 3,000.
What?
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
Wait, Matt, you have to be single, eh? There's no ways any woman in Cape Town, especially knowing Cape Townian women, is putting up with a guy who's got 3,000 cards, surely.
So funny enough, my fiance was with me when we went to Franschhoek.
Incredible. Mm-hmm. Hold on to that angel.
What? And it was quite funny because she grew up in Thailand, so she had actually never opened a booster pack. She never knew what Pokemon was. She never got into it like I did. And she actually got super excited. And we went straight to Musica at the time and we bought some booster packs. We opened them together. And she actually opens booster packs with me. She doesn't like the collecting side, but she loves the excitement of opening a booster pack.
That's very cool. So let's look at some of this stuff because you've got some pretty amazing things in this collection. So tell us what's going on in this picture here. These are the files that you actually keep them in. You've got these flip folders and you display the cards in there. So these cards, what did they cost, these booster packs that you used to buy?
So back in the day, I was trying to work it out. I think I used to spend my pocket money on them. They're probably about 20 rand a booster pack, 20 to 30 rand.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, they go for about 80 rand a booster pack. those original booster packs, if people kept them sealed, they're going for anywhere between 5 and 10,000 rand a sealed booster pack.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's probably better investment than most of the stocks in the JSE, but by a large factor. Yeah. I mean, that's incredible. So you've got all these serious investors. Meanwhile, you're collecting Pokemon cards and their actual book value has at least quadrupled and probably a whole lot more.
Yeah, I mean, Gareth, I sold a card the other day. It was a needle in a haystack find, but I sold one for 15,000 rand.
Wow.
And there's a lot of demand for it. It wasn't just a needle in a haystack find. There were a lot of people willing to buy it. So there are a lot of unique ones. I mean, I'm sure everyone's seen sort of Logan Paul coming out with his fight with Floyd Mayweather with a $500,000 Charizard around his neck. There are a lot of cards that really massively increased in value. And there's a lot of demand, which is the crazy thing.
Do you find people like they don't take you seriously because collecting Pokemon cards is not like collecting, you know, gold coins, for example. So just because a gold coin is a much more serious investment, despite the fact that yours have increased in value in a way that gold coins probably never have at any time in history. Do you find people are like, oh, Pokemon cards, what are you, like 15?
Yeah, a few people. I mean, my friends obviously rip me.
Yeah.
Especially when they find out the price of the cards I'm buying.
Yeah.
But there are a few things that really make Pokemon stand out. I think number one, I mean, it's the highest grossing media franchise of all time. You can look at the graph. I mean, if you look at Star Wars, you look at Disney, they're actually really small compared to Pokemon. It's very gender neutral. So girls are Pokemon, guys are Pokemon. And I think the big thing is the nostalgia value. When I open my collection, it takes me straight back to being sort of 8 to 10 years old. Everything's good. Life's good. You're having fun. You remember, you know, going on to ETV and watching Indigo League, the cartoon that was on, and the song comes on. It takes you straight back to being a kid. And it's just amazing. So
that's
the nostalgia
nice.
Value is really big.
It's nice that you could switch that on. Some people get very old and crusty, like me and Leanne and Mbolelo, and we forget what it's like to be kids. Okay, so take us through some of these cards here. What are these?
So the one at the bottom is the one that sort of everyone will remember. That's the Charizard. So
Charizard.
The original set that came out. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's the original set that came out in South Africa. Mm-hmm. So when everyone starts collecting, that one on the bottom left is the first card that everybody sort of wants to get.
Hmm.
And then the ones on the right hand. Sorry, yeah.
No, I'm a complete novice to this. I've never seen any of these things in my life. So you're gonna have to educate me from the ground up here. I'm okay. Useless on this stuff. Stuck.
Yeah, like those three bottom ones look the same to me.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So they are. So the first one that came out is the one on the left. So that's a card that's from 1996. So, I mean, that's a 25-year-old card.
Uh-huh.
Then what came out this year was the 25th anniversary set. So this year is actually the 25th anniversary of Pokemon.
Huh.
And they reprinted quite a lot of unique cards. Mm. So the one in the middle is actually a gold metal card.
Hmm.
Yeah, that was going for about 3,000 rand at one stage. And then the one on the right is, you can see the 25th anniversary stamp.
Yes. Okay, but now...
That little Pikachu at the cheeks.
Yeah. So just tell me, that middle one that is made of gold, and you see Leanne wouldn't have seen that, and then she would have picked one of the three cards at random. But if you were sharp and you were looking...
Throwing the waste away.
Yeah, you know, like that middle card's got some other value other than the Pokemon value. All right, so the 25th anniversary edition, did you buy that set?
Yeah, so I've just finished the set now. It was a difficult one to complete.
Mm-hmm.
And Gareth, I've actually got some booster packs for you from the 25th anniversary. You can open just to see if you got any luck, to see if you can pull the Charizard.
I think it would be wasted on me, to be perfectly honest. This is like if Mbulelo gave me tickets to some sports match. It would be a complete waste of his money and generosity.
Yeah, or if Gareth bought me another coffee.
I would be glad. Yeah, exactly. I would be glad to see your facial expressions when you open these things. But there are lots of Pokemon collectors in this country, right? South Africa's got quite a large collecting community. So what sort of... Do you have a group that you belong to? Have you got like a WhatsApp group that you're on? Is there a Facebook group? How many people do you know that are into the same thing?
Quite a few. Yeah. So I don't know if I'm allowed to say names, but there's a group. I'm a moderator on a group called PokeBro on Facebook. There are a few others. If you search for Pokemon South Africa, you'll find one. About three different WhatsApp groups. So at any one time, I've got about 1,000 WhatsApp notifications on my phone. It's pretty crazy.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's a very, very, very active community.
What's going on?
And so,
sorry, go ahead, Mbulelo.
So sorry, before we get into that. So Matt, has your interest in this, does it go to other anime? Did other anime lead you to Pokemon? Can you remember back then sort of Dragon Ball Z and all of that? Or do you, I wanted to know, do you go like... what do you call it, like a Comic-Con style? Is there something like that for Pokemon? I've never really heard or seen it.
So, yeah, I mean, like most people, Dragon Ball Z was a big part of my childhood. But I think everyone kind of sticks to one thing. So I've always stuck to Pokemon. I've dabbled in The Simpsons, Futurama, sort of everything. I've always liked animations. But Pokemon around the world is massive. So, you know, in Japan, you've got the Pokemon Center. In New York, you've got the Pokemon Center. So they release special editions, things like that. So my interest really lies in stamps. I like more than just a rare card. I like it yet to be somewhere at a certain time. So Gareth, if you pull that picture up again, if you don't mind, with
this
Charizard.
One.
So the one before.
Right. Got you. Yeah.
So what are the on the top row? You see the Pikachus.
Yes.
So for example, the one above the Charles on the left-hand side. Mm-hmm. That's the 10th anniversary Pikachu. So Hulk Hogan was actually part of that that tour in America. And he would hand these out, and they were touring around America. So you could only get it on the roadshow in America. So I imported that on eBay, basically. Then the one next to it is a UK-exclusive 20th anniversary Pikachu. So we never got the 20th anniversary set here. That little stamp has a 20 on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the one on the right, the Pikachu, so that's actually came in Happy Meals in America. So and that's the 25th anniversary Pikachu, but it was a McDonald's exclusive. So you could only get it when you bought Happy Meal. They give you a little booster pack with it. Yeah, and that's the rarest one there.
Is that the rarest one in your collection?
No, these are, I wouldn't say it's the rarest, but these are some of the more interesting ones. And they are super rare. In South Africa, at least, because you have to import a lot of them.
Which one is the one that you're most, you know, covetous of? Like, which is the one that if your house was on fire and you could only save one of them, which one would it be?
Gareth and Orsi, it's all of them. But
Yeah, because obviously, you know, the one on its own isn't necessary. That's the collection that makes it valuable. But if there was one card that you kind of look at and go, mm-hmm, that's my pride, enjoy that one.
I definitely, that Pikachu you see there with the 10th anniversary stamp, it's right up there.
That's the top just, right, the one on the top right.
It's on my left, but yeah, I think top left, I think, yeah.
Okay.
That's the one. I just love the fact that Hulk Hogan gave it out. It was just,
right.
And you can only get it in America. Those are sort of things that I love about the collecting side of things, not just a rare card and a booster pack.
All right. What are all of these here then in this picture? Because here you've got a whole assortment of them.
This was quite interesting. So I buy cards from a local shop near me, and they called me and they asked me to help a lady. She came in with a box of cards.
Yeah.
So I actually helped her sell all the cards and start an education plan for her kids.
Oh, wow.
But these are a few that I kept for myself because I had to deal with them. I kept a few of them. And these are really interesting. So it was a competition, and the little one on the top left, the Eevee, when mm-hmm. you entered the competition, you got that. And as you progressed throughout the competition, you got the different cards. So it's not on here. I hadn't got it just yet, but I bought one, which was when you're in the finals. And then when you eventually won the finals, you got that victory medal at the bottom.
Oh, wow.
So this person, she got the cards from it, obviously gone through the competition, went right through it, and eventually won it, which is really cool to see as well. So that's essentially a first place medal, yeah.
Phenomenal. And you remember that, what was that game people used to play where they would literally go around town chasing down these Pokemons?
Yeah. Pokemon Go. So Pokemon Go, I never really got into it, but it's still got a massive following. I mean, you can find it on Facebook as well. People go crazy for it.
Yeah, there were people who were, somebody even says here, she knows someone who drove into a pavement while trying to catch a Pokemon in Pokemon Go.
I can believe it.
Nutcases.
Well, there was a story, Gareth, I don't know if you saw it in New York. There were two policemen who got fired because they didn't attend a robbery because they were trying to catch a Pokemon on Pokemon Go.
This is where
it's not really funny, but yeah.
This is where Collectomania.
Well, how bad was the robbery?
Collectomania tends to the mania part.
Maybe the robbery wasn't that bad.
Where do you keep these things in a safe, or do you just keep them in your bookshelf? What do you do?
I'm a bit scared to kind of disclose that.
Because this is actually quite a valuable collection, I hear you.
Yeah, but it's in a place I can see them. I look through them often.
Sure. Yeah, it's also sad. Like, some people have very valuable collections of various kinds. I mean, yours is obviously one that you can display. But a lot of people have to hide their things. They have to put it in the bank. And that's got to suck because you spend all your time collecting this stuff and you can never look at it. It's horrible.
So you got to find the balance. I mean, I remember when I was young, my family had what's called lock boxes at the bank.
Mm.
And they even broke into the lock box at the bank. So I think you've got to enjoy it. And it's just kind of luck of the draw. But at the end of the day, you can insure it, but it becomes quite expensive. As long as you look after it and you just enjoy it. So what I've also started doing is I'm going to create an Instagram account. So I can at least have a record of sort of all my cards.
All right.
In case the worst happened, at least I got something.
You still have something to look at.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's nice. Are you ever going to sell this collection? I mean, if someone comes to you with stupid money, they're like, here, you know, I'll give you 200 grand for your collection. I mean, that might not be enough. I don't know what it's worth. Would you think, yeah, okay, right, time to sell up?
Yeah, I guess. I suppose it comes down to the situation. You know, I think if I've been retrenched or something and I had to look at doing it, I mean, yeah, you would look at doing it. But at the end of the day, I'd love to pass it down to my kids. I'd love to get my kids involved in it. If they choose to sell it, that's their choice. But yeah, it's stuff you can't just get. Some of the cards are 25 years old plus. They're really difficult to find.
Yeah, just don't have children that then don't know the value of the thing and they just throw it out with the rest of your stuff. And they're like, oh God, dad kept collecting all this bullshit. So I'm just going to throw it away. You know?
It happened to so many people because when I first started collecting our first pictures, and so many people would message me and say, oh, my mom threw my cards up when I was younger. Where did they go? Yeah, it's quite sad, actually.
You were going to ask something in Bulala. I interrupted you.
Yeah. No, I was going to, Matt, obviously, as a collector, what do you think of the movement to sort of the NFT world? And do you think that, because I would imagine part of having cards is also the social aspect. You know what I mean? You can meet people, because I like that aspect of anything, whether it's video games or that. Is with NFTs, we're going to lose that, because then I'm just some nerd on my phone at home, and I quite like the NFT thing. But what do you think of that as a collector? I've been interested to hear from collectors what they think.
So it's a great question. So I think the first thing Pokemon did is they did a really innovative thing. So when you open a booster pack, I'll actually like to open one just now just so you guys can see.
Mm.
They give you a little code card, and you can scan that code card, and there's actually online, you can play the game online, and it gives you another digital booster pack.
Hmm.
You can open another booster pack like that. But NFTs have a really interesting space, and they're currently being used. So I don't know if you guys saw, but Steve Aoki, when lockdown hit, he went all into collecting cards.
Right.
And also NFTs. But what's quite interesting is you can get a card graded, and it comes in a plastic slab. You can't open it, and it's got a unique serial number on it. But what people started doing is they would copy the serial number, encase a worthless card, and then have the serial number on. So if you scanned it, it would look like it was a really high value card.
Hmm.
Now what they're doing with NFTs is I will send you an NFT that's a replica of the card. Once you actually get the card, you can burn the NFT. It's just a basic way of verifying the actual authenticity of it. So I think NFTs have a space where they are right now. I think they're very hyped.
I didn't realize that fraud was such a big thing in the Pokemon card business.
So Gareth, if you Google it right now, Logan Paul, the YouTuber, he bought, it was the only sealed first edition case left in the world.
Oof.
For $3.5 million.
Oof.
And it turned out to be fake. It's a big thing at the moment.
Oh wow, that is such bad luck. Could happen to anyone. Well, I mean, that's just awful, right?
So I think if there are any parents listening as well, I think it's fakes is quite a big thing that's kind of crept in. So when there's interest, when there's money floating around, fakes do tend to come, and you know, people try to scam people. So the community is really good at spotting it and reporting it and educating people on it. But I think, yeah, what tends to happen is parents might find that the cards are, oh, these are quite expensive, and they go to Chinatown and they find these booster packs for a fraction of the cost. Kids go to school, they trade them, they come back, they think they got good cards, they try to sell them. So it's quite important to educate on what is a fake. And I would highly advise all parents that don't fall in the trap of just finding fake cards for the kids to kind of destroy. It really damages the collection value, and it really just makes it unpleasant.
All right, so let's open on the show for the first time ever a booster pack, and let's see how this feels. Let's see what we've got here.
So yeah, Gareth, this is a cool collector's tip.
There we go. Okay, good. Show it to us. We're opening this now. This has never been opened before. You're going to open it on the show. Excellent. Here, Leanne, are you ready? Are you ready? Okay. How many cards do you get in there?
So this is a unique one. It's normally 10, but this one you're going to get 4. Because the collector's set.
Dun, dun,
dun. So let's see if you're lucky, Gareth.
Let's see. Well, you're lucky. What's that?
So this is a common one. So the third or the fourth card would be the big rare one if you pull it.
Okay. What do we think of that one? Also just
a common one.
Oh, God. Okay. So far, very boring. All right. Next one.
This is not bad. So this is called the Classic Collection. So it's super nice.
Okay.
And
what is it?
So it's not the greatest one.
Ugh.
It's not the greatest one.
This is why.
But it's okay.
This is why I don't collect these cards. My bad luck. Wouldn't it be nice if we pulled some phenomenal, like, 40,000 Rand card out of there? Oh, man, I would have been excited. Then I might even have started collecting. Who knew? Who knew?
Yeah.
All right, so you're the first person I've ever met who collects Pokemon cards, but you can't be the only one. There's a big community. You mentioned all these Facebook groups and all the rest of it. I'm excited, man. I just love hearing about what people collect and what lengths they'll go to get these cards. You spend a lot of time on the internet buying them?
Definitely. So one of the exciting parts of the hobby is actually trying to track them down. So the new ones, it's, you know, it's trading, it's finding people, it's quite easy. You can buy them. It's the old ones that become quite hard. So just buying them, you got to find someone willing to sell, but you got to find the collection. So What I try to do is find people that have a collection somewhere in the back of their cupboard. Then I'll offer to buy the entire collection. I take what I want from the collection, and then I'll resell a lot of the cards just to kind of cover the cost of acquiring them. Or can help, like the one I did recently with the lady. I kind of took them on consignment. I sold them. I kept like full spreadsheet that she could see. And then just took sort of a handling fee on it, which also helps quite nicely.
And you said that you managed to set up a little fund for her to educate her kids.
Yeah, that was awesome. Wow. So instead of just keeping the cards, she actually took the money and she's put into education savings for the kids, which is super exciting.
That's very cool.
Sort of nice on that side.
Well, you see, you're doing good work as well. Okay, listen, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on, Matt, and thank you for sharing your collection with us. This is very, very cool. And I hope you find all the other Pokemon cards that you're still looking for. Is there still a huge long list of ones that you want that you don't have?
Well, I think there are about 11,000 unique English ones. So I'm about a third of the way of collecting them all.
That's amazing.
You won't be done next week.
Yeah.
No.
I'm closing this up.
Unless I won the lottery and I just raided eBay, but otherwise it's going to take some time. Gary, thanks for having me, and really thanks for the initiative. It's really cool being able to talk about collectibles.
And awesome. Well, thank you. Thank you very much for joining us. There's Matt and his collection of Pokemon cards. And you know what? If you haven't started collecting yet, or if you have started collecting yet and you want to share it with us, tell us. Just send us an email. contact@cliffcentral.com. We want to hear from you. And maybe, just maybe, you will be featured on the show next. Of course, it's brought to you by the South African Gold Coin Exchange and the Scoin Shop. And if you're into collecting interesting or unusual things, or you know such a person, get in touch with us. contact@cliffcentral.com. We can feature you and them on the show. And it's very, very exciting. Go to scoinshop.com to see what they've also got. Not just so you can collect it, but also so you can invest in something which you know is going to grow in value. Awesome, awesome stuff. I had no idea all of this Pokemon stuff was going on. Just shows you.
I knew it was going on. I just didn't know that you could. They were still producing new cards, and it's fascinating.
If you know, you know.
And I still say, guys like Matt, I mean, devilishly handsome face, but he's also giving people like me hope, is that you can still live your dream. I mean, the fact that his lady's willing to, he's found an angel. Guy's got, what, 3,000 cards?
I have bad news for you, Mbulelo. It's not because you have some strange collection that they're not coming.
You're suggesting it's my personality.
I'm not saying anything. We've hurled enough invective at each other for one morning. We will see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. bright and early. Have an excellent Monday, everybody. Cheers. CliffCentral.com.